Nice to be back here with you all once again. Minus Lal Gopal, it's not the same, but still nice to be back with you all. Panchatattva is in North Carolina, so he's not going to be here tonight. Working his way back. I thought, I was a little torn between what I said I was going to do and also speaking something about our visit to Sri Mayapur, so I thought I would combine the two somehow. I've been reading from first canto consecutively through. Now in chapter 12, which is the birth of Emperor Parikshit. And this evening I'd like to read verses 17 and 18. And then we'll go to Mayapur. We'll connect the message here with the personalities of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's associates. It fits in very nicely. In the storyline of this chapter, chapter 12, verses 1 through 11 that are Suta Goswami speaking to the sages of Naimisharanya about the Supreme Personality of Godhead as Paramatma protecting Maharaj Parikshit within the womb of Uttara when Ashwatthama sent the Brahmastra weapon. And previously Uttara's prayers to the Supreme Lord were described. The whole incident was actually already described. Now it's being described again. Such an important phenomena. It's important because one of the reasons it's important is because Maharaj Parikshit is about to receive the Srimad Bhagavatam. So he's a qualified receiver. Shukadeva Goswami is a qualified speaker, so we need to know in the transmission of the knowledge of Bhagavatam who is qualified to speak it, who is qualified to receive it. And since we're on the receiving end, there's a lot of attention given to the qualifications of Maharaj Parikshit. In fact, this whole chapter, the section that we're discussing now, after he's protected by the Supreme Lord, we hear the constellation of stars aligning themselves slowly to make a perfect configuration of stars, stellar constellations to manifest perfect time for the child to be born. And then Maharaj Parikshit is born. But going back, it's a very nice description. When the Brahmastra is coming, Uttara has offered her prayers. The Supreme Personality of Godhead appears, according to Suta Goswami, just perfectly in size and appearance so that Maharaj Parikshit can see. Because he's the Supreme Lord, he could protect the child differently, however he likes. But he chose not only to protect the child, but to show himself to the child. So, within the womb of Uttara, he appeared the size of a thumb, And forearms, it describes his complexion, his radiantly golden dhoti and helmet and earrings and ornaments, and his club whirling about like a shooting star, you know, like an atom, like an electron. Zoom, zoom, zoom. To check the heat of the Brahmastra. And his eyes were blood red in anger over the difficulty that Maharaj Pariksit was being put in by Ashwatthama. And the child, still within the womb, is looking at this figure coming, and it's clear to him that he's being protected because the heat, which it was unbearable, is now subsiding. So he's wondering, who is this? Prabhupada discusses that within the womb, up until the seventh month, the living entity is in a state of consciousness that is like anesthetized, susupti, deep sleep. And then at that point in time, seventh month, the child becomes conscious, like externally conscious, like we're conscious, not like sleeping, but awake. And so the child then begins moving and is uncomfortable and wants to get out. It's cramped in here, let me out of here. So in that stage of Uttara's pregnancy was when this Brahmastra was shot. So Pariksit was conscious. He saw the Supreme Lord. And then as suddenly as he had appeared, when the Brahmastra was checked, that same Supreme Lord who is present universally in all directions simultaneously just disappeared. So there's lots of nice discussion about personal feature of the Lord, Bhagavan, his Paramatma feature, how he's all-pervasive. At the same time, that all-pervasive Paramatma feature is resting upon the personal feature. Krishna came to protect Maharaj Pariksit. And this feature of protection, when the Lord protected Maharaj Pariksit, or when the Lord kills demons, it's Vishnu. Because in the spiritual world, there's no demons. In the material world, there's demons. So that's Lord Vishnu who kills the demons. So that's the form that Maharaj Pariksit saw. And then some nice discussion about, very important, like four verses describing the relationship of sanskaras with bringing piety to the receiver of that sanskara and the performer of the sanskara. Like starting with, Prabhupada identifies several of them, but starting with Garbhagan sanskara and how it's elevating for the parents. It's the intended recipient of that sanskara is the yet to be born child, yet even to be conceived child. And that piety that's transferred by that sanskara to the soul not yet born makes an arrangement so that when the child is conceived and is born, first is conceived as a very elevated soul, and when born, this constellation of stars is such that it brings about a good influence, beneficial influence for that soul to complete their journey. And then Prabhupada discusses that in order to have all that happen, you have to have really qualified brahmanas. In this case, it's Kripacharya and Domya. They were the qualified brahmanas. But where there are such qualified brahmanas today, there are no Kripacharyas around, there are no Domyas around. And so the Goswamis of Vrindavan, particularly Gopal Bhatta Goswami, the author of the procedures, the tantras for Vaishnavas, Gaudiya Vaishnavas, they preferred the Pancharatrika system of sangskaras, as did the Sri Vaishnavas, who also follow the Pancharatrika system, which primarily the emphasis goes to the procedure of calling upon the names of the Lord as the means of elevation and purification, as does the Bhagavatam itself. The name and quality and pastimes of the Supreme Lord as the means of elevation. And the Saptika Puranas, similarly, the Padma Purana and Vishnu Purana, in particular, very strongly emphasize the chanting of the holy names of the Lord. There's many verses in each of those scriptures that extol the virtue of chanting the names of the Lord, and within the scriptures themselves again and again, the Lord's names and pastimes are narrated. That's the Pancharatrika system. And Prabhupada makes the point that the Pancharatrika system is meant only for spiritual elevation. It's not meant for enhancing one's position of worldly enjoyment. Whereas the Vedic system, which is more gradual, it does have that component of, in fact, it gives the benediction section of the Vedic system gives clear impetus for the performer. And one who does this ritual gets this and that or the other material benefit. The idea is gradually increasing piety through lifetime after lifetime after lifetime after lifetime. It's a multiple lifetime process, not just an event over here. Multiple lifetime process to gradually become elevated so that one can more easily surrender to the personality of Godhead. Then there's the spiritual benefit. So it's gradual up to the spiritual benefit. But the Pancharatrika system is just for spiritual benefit. Or it's the path of nivritti. There are these two bona fide, authorized paths, pravritti and nivritti. Pravritti is gradually increasing, elevating one's position in one's capacity for and eligibility for material enjoyment, up to the heavenly planets and then beyond into the spiritual realm. The path of nivritti, from the very outset, the declaration is made, da-da-da-da, this is not for material advancement. If you're interested in material advancement, close the book. We're not talking about material advancement. It's decreasing one's association with matter in the mood of enjoyment, and rather increasing one's involvement directly with the internal potency of the Lord for the purpose of His enjoyment. So that's the Pancharatrika system. There's still sangskaras, but the purpose is not for enhancing material enjoyment, or let's say, like performing Garbhadhan Sangskara so that one can have a very elevated child, so that one's pious life will be bountifully enriched and one will be able to enjoy like anything. It's not the purpose is to attract a very qualified soul, become oneself eligible to give direction to a qualified soul to end the cycle of birth and death. So when Maharaj Parikshit was born, Domya and Kripacharya performed the Jatakarma. Prabhupada gives a very graphic description of when the Jatakarma ceremony should be performed. Instead of saying umbilical cord, he calls it the something pipe.
Naval pipe.
Okay. And when the naval pipe is cut, that's when the Jatakarma. So it's the stage of being dependent upon, not literally dependent, the fact the body of the child and the body of the mother are the same. It's just growing from the body of the mother through the navel pipe. And when that's cut, there's now another stage. And so a ceremony is performed at this. In other traditions, it's called rites of passage. The movement of the soul through different stages of embodiment. Like, you know, Anaprashna is another significant one where instead of the mother of the milk, it's now grains, something outside of the mother for nourishment, ceremony. The soul moving from one stage of life to the next stage of life. And is to create auspiciousness for that transition, marking the end of something and the beginning of something else. So to create auspiciousness for that transition. In the beginning, it's for the benefit of the soul, and in later stages one does that for the benefit of oneself. Like, you know, marriage is another ceremony where a stage of life begins. Of course, parents make arrangement for those things, but then, you know, this is a family function where everyone is participating. And then, you know, once again, before conceiving a child, the next stage once again. Diksha is another samskara. It's a stage where one is making the connection to the spiritual link, or the second birth, dvija, a stage of the soul, going to yet another kind of dependency, spiritual dependency. And when this Jatakarma was performed along with the mantras chanted by the priests and the rituals, there was this procedure of, according to the exact time of birth, the calculation of the stellar influences, and then pronouncing what the mature life of this child will be. And based upon that, the name is given. So the first statement made by the Brahmanas is what we discussed this morning. The Brahmanas said, "This spotless son has been restored by the all-powerful and all-pervasive Lord Vishnu, the personality Godhead, in order to oblige you. That's you as Mara's Yudhisthira. Prabhupada points out there's two reasons why the super soul appeared to protect Mara's Pariksit. One was the quality of the child himself. He was a pure devotee. And the Lord protects his pure devotees. And the protection required was this invincible weapon, something that nothing can stop, released by Ashwatthama, needed to be stopped. Since nothing can stop it, the Lord had to stop it. So he did. And the second reason was because of the quality of Maharaj Yudhisthira. Because Maharaj Yudhisthira was so devoted to Krishna. Because he was so devoted to Krishna, his grandson was protected. So if somebody here becomes pure devotee, you can count on the Lord's protection. Not only yourself and immediate family, but generations before and after. One will become very dear to the Lord. And then text 17, all that was just background. Text 17, the Brahmanas say, for this reason is the fact that Maharaj Pariksit was protected even before he was born by the Supreme Lord, being very dear to him and very dear to Maharaj Yudhisthira. For this reason, this child will be well known in the world as one who is protected by the personality of God. And not only was, but throughout his life, protected by this personality of Godhead. O most fortunate one, there is no doubt that this child will become a first-class devotee and will be qualified with all good qualities. First-class devotee is Mahabhagavata. So Prabhupada spent some time discussing what Mahabhagavata means. So you can, you know, keep it really simple. There's beginning, intermediate, and advanced. So it's on that end. Or Kanishta, Madhyama, and Uttama. And he was in the Uttama platform. And amongst Uttamas, the Uttama. There's these three, Kanishta, Madhyama, and Uttama, and some Gaudiya Vaishnavas make this distinction. Kanishta, Kanishta, Madhyama, Kanishta, Uttama, Kanishta. And Kanishta, Madhyama, 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 Uttama, Madhyama. So on. So he was on the Uttama, or Mahabhagavata platform. Here's how Prabhupada makes these distinctions. Those who go to temples of the Lord and offer their respects to the deity without sufficient knowledge in the theoretical and theological science, and therefore without any respect for the devotees of the Lord, are called materialistic devotees or kanishta adhikaris. Above that, the devotees who have developed a mentality of genuine service to the Lord and who thus make friendships only with similar devotees, show favor to the neophytes and avoid the atheists, are called Madhyama Adhikari. But those who see everything in the Lord and everything of the Lord, and also see everything in everything an eternal relation with the Lord, so that there is nothing within their purview of sight except the Lord, are called Mahabhagavatas. Perfect in all respects, a devotee may be in any of these three categories, and they can become automatically qualified by all good qualities, and thus a Mahabhagavata devotee like Maharaj Pariksit is certainly perfect in all respects. So, not just because his grandfather was so qualified, therefore he was so qualified. Because Rajiv Gandhi and Indira Gandhi were in the family of Mahatma Gandhi, that were the same caliber as Mahatma Gandhi. Even in Advaita Acharya's family, he had six sons. Three of them are described, and three of them are not described. According to Krishnadas Kaviraj, for that which is useless, there's no need of discussion. There were three of his sons that they were not devotees. Well, actually, specifically in Chaitanya Bhagavat, in his purport, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur describes, they accepted Advaita Acharya, the three sons, two of the three sons, accepted Advaita Acharya as Mahavishnu, and their view was, because he's Mahavishnu, therefore Nimai Pandit is his servant. And Advaita Acharya rejected them as impersonalists, because, you know, he that's certainly not what he taught, but they had, like, you know, not only respect for their father, but too much respect for their father. So much respect that they had offended Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu by their mentality. And what followed that mentality was, and any of our family members are also qualified like Advaita Acharya by seminal qualification. When we visited in Eka Chakra, I didn't make a big deal about it, but when we went to our ISKCON center is on the side of the main road where the birthplace of Lord Nityananda is. On the other side is Birchandra, where the son of Advaita Acharya lived, and the deity that Lord Nityananda worshipped was in the care of his son, Birchandra. And those who are descendants of Birchandra, they're known as Nityananda Vamsa. And their idea is, because we're sons or descendants of Birchandra, who is the son of Lord Nityananda, we're like the chosen people. And someone can chant Hare Krishna and take the teachings that Lord Nityananda gave, but, you know, we're the chosen people by seminal line. So that's not in Lord Chaitanya's teachings, nor Lord Nityananda's teachings, but that's their point of view. So, according to Bhaktivinoda Thakur, they're one of the upa sampradayas. They're deviated from the original teachings. So they look like, we didn't make any point of this when we were in Eka Chakra, because we didn't want to have anybody make any offense, even mental offense, but we're now in St. Louis and we can understand philosophically that to say that one is qualified because of birth is not the teaching of Bhagavad Gita, it's not the teaching of the Bhagavatam, it's not the teaching of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. One is not disqualified or qualified. One is by material calculation, rather by spiritual qualification. And one can become fully spiritually qualified by proper training and by proper performance of samskaras. And one may be born in a elevated family, but one can be deviated and unqualified to the point where Krishna Das Kaviraj said, we're not even going to talk about these people. There's no need to talk about the useless. But they're sons of Advaita Acharya. So, Maharaj Parikshit was being told by the Brahmanas to Maharaj Yudhisthira, this will be a Mahabhagavata personality. And the characteristic mentioned for a Mahabhagavata personality is that they see everything in relation to Krishna. Everything within Krishna, and Krishna within everything. In fact, they can't see anything but Krishna. So that's elevated. Prabhupada speaks about the in Ishupanishad. Could you keep your hands? Yeah, just like distracting. It's playing piano or something. Piano? You're a piano player? Speaking of Mahabhagavata.
Ishopanishad.
Yeah, Ishopanishad. How does a Mahabhagavata, how does a topmost devotee see things? And Prabhupada describes it. They can see with distinction the difference between, just like the verse in Bhagavad Gita, Vidya Vidaya Sampane Brahmani Gavi Hasani Shuni Chaiva Supaki Cha Pandita Samadarshana. The Pandita, the learned person, can see with equal vision Samadarshana, the dog, the dog eater, the Brahmin, the cow, the elephant, Gavi Hastani. Although seeing with equal vision, the behavior towards each one is appropriate. Seeing with spiritual vision doesn't mean everything's a blur. You make no distinctions. You make distinctions. But the prominent feature is seeing the soul. So now let's go to Mayapur. With an example of one of the followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu who was on that platform. In Navadvip, before Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was born, the previous dynasty of kings before the there were different versions of invasions coming from the north. Sometimes it was from this part, sometimes from that part. And during the time of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the rulers were Turkish. And the local ruler was Chand Kazi. The Kazi was a title for something like one who oversaw on behalf of the king. He wasn't the king, but under the king he was responsible, like a zamindar, responsible for large tract of land. And his specific function, well, two specific functions, he would see to taxes being received and then, you know, given to the king. And he was the judge, because the rule of a Vedic king was they didn't have, divisions like our American system. There's the judicial department and the legislative department, the executive department. It was one department. Pay your taxes here, you get judged here, and the enforcer is over here too. So he's very powerful. Prior to the Chan Kazi and the rule of the Turkish kings, that very same area was where the kings under Vaishnava rule, the previous, there was a dynasty of kings by the name Sena. So you go behind where Chan Kazi's residence was, and you find the ruins. You find the stones and the columns and the previous structure for the palace of Lakshman Sen and Balal Sen and the whole lineage of kings. So that area was where the governing ruler presided. And after some time, the Turkish invasion, the same dynasty was dismantled, and the Turkish king ruled by military conquest, and everybody was under Turkish rule. And so during those periods of time, large numbers of people became Muslim. So there was this, Hindu-Muslim thing happening. To this day, that's current in Navadvip. One of the descendants of that Sena dynasty, who was a contemporary of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, was Shivananda Sen. He wasn't a ruler, but he was a leader. And a very well-known service that Shivananda Sen rendered not only for Lord Chaitanya but for all the Vaishnavas of Bengal. He took responsibility for every year when the devotees would go from West Bengal to Puri to see Lord Chaitanya and take part in the Rath Yatra festival. And then, because they wanted to stay with Mahaprabhu, they stayed for the 4 months of the rainy season, and then they went back. So all of their arrangements in transportation going down, staying, and returning, he took full responsibility for it. And the numbers of persons that would go each year was many hundreds. During our visit to Mayapur, we had around 350 people, and it was a thing to organize for transporting all those people and feeding all those people. And somebody got sick, and somebody, children, and the bus broke down or something. It's always something. But then we went back to Mayapur. We had some nice place to stay. But when all these devotees were traveling, they were going through different countries when they had to pay taxes, and there's dacoits, and there's boat crossings, and, it's complicated. You can't go back to the campus and stay in your room in the Lotus building. You have to make separate arrangements each place, meals each place, so it's very complicated. And that's what Shivananda Sen did. All their accommodations, all their meals, all their transportation, all their everything. So he was a very qualified person. So one time, when they were making their journey to go to Jagannath Puri, they passed through one town and one stray dog. And we don't have so much of that in America. There are dog catchers, and they put the dogs in, and have stray dogs. But in India, it's everywhere, stray dogs. What that genre is. So one stray dog started accompanying all the devotees going to Puri. And he was so attached to the devotees that Jivananda, being a Mahabhagavata devotee, he started treating the dog like a devotee. He made sure that the dog had food every day. He made sure that the dog was got on the boat and crossed the rivers with all the devotees. One time, one boatman refused to let a dog in his boat. So he paid him 10 times the normal fee to take a person to take the dog across in his boat. 10 panas of conch shells, whatever that is. And then one time further during the journey, they reached their destination a little late, and as Shivananda saying was making sure everybody had residential accommodations and their meals, he went back and checked with the people who were supposed to take care of the dog. Did the dog get fed this evening? And they said, oh, we completely forgot. We got so busy making, oh, you must see that the dog is fed. So they went looking for the dog to feed him, but they couldn't find him anywhere. So Shivananda Sen sent 10 men to go find the dog and make sure he got his meal. Stray dog. They couldn't find the dog anywhere. Shivananda Sen was very unhappy. He was feeling that he had offended the dog by not taking care of him properly. Some days later, they finally reached Puri. And when they reached Puri, Shivananda Sen took his bath in the sea and went to see Lord Jagannath, and then went to Gambira to see Lord Chaitanya and pay his respects, offer his obeisances to Lord Chaitanya. When he reached the Gambira, much to his surprise, was the dog seated right in front of Lord Chaitanya. And Lord Chaitanya was instructing him, chant Krishna! And the dog distinctly called out, Krishna! And Lord Chaitanya then took some pulp from coconut and threw it to the dog, and the dog caught the coconut, ate the coconut. Then again Lord Chaitanya said, chant Rama!
Rama!
Him some more coconut pulp. When Shivananda Sen saw this, not only he was completely astonished that here's a dog chanting the holy names of the Lord, but he's receiving directly the mercy of Mahaprabhu's own foodstuff from his hand. He went and threw himself at the feet of the dog and paid obeisances and stood up with folded hands and pray to the dog, please forgive me for my offenses against you. You are such an elevated personality, receiving the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in this way. This is a Mahabhagavata. We can't imitate. But he was actually seeing how he was so elevated. From the next day, again the dog disappeared. And all the devotees said, the dog has directly returned to the spiritual world having received the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Yeah. And everyone referred to the dog as the dog of Shivananda Sen. Because the dog received the mercy of Shivananda Sen, he received the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And because he received the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he went back to Godhead directly. Because another feature of a Mahabhagavata devotee is that material circumstances will go the other direction. Those who are not Mahabhagavata devotees, Material circumstances determine their happiness or distress. If material circumstances are nice, happiness. If material circumstances are averse or adverse, distress. And so the unsteadiness of happiness and distress, we know from Bhagavad Gita, with matra sparshas to kaunteya sitoshna sukha dukada agama payon nityastang satiksha sabharta. Krishna is advising Arjuna to be tolerant of duality. But a Mahabhagavata devotee doesn't even see duality. They only see Krishna. They only see Krishna. For them, duality doesn't enter because they're so attached to Krishna. And that was the platform of Shivananda Sen. Another year that Shivananda Sen was taking the devotees to Puri was the year just after Haridas Thakur left his body, passing of Haridas Thakur. And so that year, Lord Nityananda accompanied the devotees. Because Lord Nityananda was told by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to stay in Bengal, don't come with the devotees every year, stay and preach. Because I've appeared in this world to deliver the chanting of the holy name. You are my very self. You do that in Bengal. And because Mother Sachi has asked me to stay here, Lord Nityananda went. But he wanted to pay his respects to Haridas Thakur, and so he came with the devotees, heading for Puri. And on one occasion, as the afternoon was wearing on, Shivananda Sen told the devotees, go to a particular village, wait there, I'll be there as soon as I can, I have to take care of this boat crossing and these toll collectors and tax collectors, and I'll deal with the headache and you go ahead and get situated and I'll soon be with you. But it took, you know how it goes, it sometimes takes longer than you expect it's going to take, and it was taking a long time. And Lord Nityananda was growing impatient in a transcendental way. So he said to the devotees, this Shivananda Sen, he's just an offender. I'm so hungry, I could die. And he's not making any arrangements to feed me. I curse that his all three sons should die because of their offense to me, causing me to be so hungry. Which is pretty radical. And when everybody heard, they were, Shivananda Sen's sons are going to die because he hasn't fed Lord Nityananda. And when the wife of Shivananda Sen heard this, she was totally distressed. So that when Shivananda Sen caught up with the group, his wife went crying to him, Lord Nityananda is cursed, our son should die. And Shivananda Sen didn't flinch at all. He said, for the offense that we have caused, the inconvenience that we have caused, Lord Nityananda, our sons and we should die. Stop crying. We've offended the Supreme Lord. And he quickly made some arrangement for his meal at the home of a cowherd, and then came to Lord Nityananda to inform him his meal is ready, his accommodation is ready. And even as he was approaching Lord Nityananda to pay obeisances, Lord Nityananda kicked him in the chest hard. And Shivananda Sen didn't go like, hey, what are you doing? He offered some very beautiful prayer. He said, you are the most merciful form of the Lord. You finally accepted me as your servant by admonishing me in this way. Now I know you've finally accepted me as your servant. I'm the most, my life is now made perfect. Thank you. And Lord Nityananda was very pleased by his reply. But Shivananda Sen had a nephew who saw this whole thing, cursed his sons to die, kick him in the chest. He left at once. He just, his mind was too disturbed. He wanted to go ahead of everybody and lodge his complaint with Lord Chaitanya. Do you know what Lord Nityananda did? You better check this person. So as he reached the place where Mahaprabhu was staying, as he was paying his obeisances before Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu turned to his servant and said, "Can you instruct Sri Kant that when he, before paying obeisances, he should remove his upper garment?" Rather than saying it to him directly, he said to his servant, "Can you chastise him for me, please?" And then when, before Sri Kant began to speak, he told all the devotees that were assembled there, "Sri Kant's mind is disturbed. So whatever it is that he wants, please pacify his mind and let him have whatever he wants." Sri Kant could understand that Lord Chaitanya is omniscient. He already knew everything. And so he didn't even speak. His mind was completely pacified. Supreme Lord knows, I don't have to inform him. And everything is going to be all right. And sure enough, when the three sons of Shivananda Sen didn't die, it was Lord Nityananda testing him, and he passed the test. Just that he had complete faith in Lord Nityananda. And by that complete faith in Lord Nityananda, that also nurtured his faith in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. There was another incident with Shivananda Sen's nephew. 1 year after they took everybody back to West Bengal, Shivananda Sen was feeling too much separation from Lord Chaitanya, so he went back ahead of just he and his nephew, Sri Kant. And they spent 2 months with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Puri. And Lord Chaitanya, when they parted, instructed him, "Tell the devotees this coming year for Rath Yatra, they need not come. I'm going to go there. I'm going to go to Bengal and see all the devotees. And I'm going to take prasad at the home of Jagatananda Pandit. You please tell them, they don't need to come." So Shivananda Sen was very happy to let the devotees know Gauranga Mahaprabhu is coming to see us. So it was during a particular month, and they were waiting. He wasn't coming. So they were getting more anxiety, and great separation. So one day, where the house of Shivananda Sen was in Kumarahatta, which is very near to now Calcutta, and one devotee named Nisringananda Brahmachari came to Kumarahatta and saw the devotees look so sad and said, "What's wrong?" And they said, "Mahaprabhu said he was going to come. We didn't go to see him. There's so much wanting his association. And he hasn't come, and the month is almost complete." And right on the spot, The Sringananda said, very well, I'll bring him here in 3 days. And everyone thought, you know, who's this Sringananda going to bring Mahaprabhu? So, but he was very serious, and he went into a place, quiet place, and sat and meditated for 2 straight days, nonstop, day and night. And at the end of the second day, he left his meditation, came to Sivananda Singh, and said, Mahaprabhu is today in Puglia, and tomorrow morning he's coming to Kumarahatta. We should make nice festival to receive Mahaprabhu. Let's take rest early, get up, and make all arrangements for the festival first thing in the morning. And they were thinking. So he was the first one up, and he did all the cooking, and he was a worshiper. He was called, his name was Pradyumna Brahmachari, but Lord Chaitanya gave him the name Nrisinghananda because he was a worshiper of Lord Nrisinghadev. He really liked Lord Nrisinghadev. So he had a Nrisingha deity. So he made many preparations from early in the morning. Sivananda Singh supplied all the ingredients, did all this cooking, and then he made 3 plates for offering, one for his deity of Lord Nrisingha, one for Shalagram Shila, and one for Mahaprabhu. So he had sitting places and the table and the prasad. And in the procedure for making the offering, just as he was making the offering, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came and ate everything. And Sringananda was in ecstasy. He has come. But then he went in his mood of transcendental ecstasy and complained to Sivananda Singh. He said, this Mahaprabhu is a madman. He said, he's eaten all 3 offerings. Now, Shalagram and Lord Nrisinghadev, they have to fast because he's so greedy. I want some more ingredients because I want to at least prepare and cook for my Nrisingha deity. He shouldn't have to fast because Mahaprabhu is greedy. And Sivananda Singh thought, who knows about this Nrisingha deity? Take these ingredients. But the next year, when the devotees went to see Mahaprabhu, he made comment that Sringananda, in that month of, forget which month it was, he made the best prasad. Mm-hmm. And so Sivananda Singh could understand that Sringananda Brahmachari, actually all of those things happened. He had this capacity given by the personality of Godhead to call him and he would come because of his intense love for him. One other pastime that's described in Chaitanya Charitamrita doesn't mention the name of Sivananda Singh, but it mentions that 1 year she didn't come because she would regularly make the trip along with her husband. 1 year she didn't come, and Mahaprabhu asked, where's your wife? And said, she's pregnant, so she's not able to come this year. So Lord Chaitanya then gave a name before the child was born. He said, I would like you to name the child after my godbrother Paramananda Puri. Because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's spiritual master was Ishwara Puri, and Paramananda Puri was also a disciple of Madhavendra Puri. So they named him Paramananda, or sometimes they called him Puridas. When the child was born, Mother Sivananda Singh brought him until he was very, very small. And Mahaprabhu asked her to bring the child before him. So he placed the child in front, just looking up at Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So he stuck out his foot and gave his foot to the child to suck on. So he sucked on his toe. And the devotees could understand Mahaprabhu was giving him some special mercy. So this Puri Das later became Kavi Karnapur, and Kavi Karnapur was an author of many transcendental literatures, including the book Gauragonadesh Deepika, which describes who's who in Lord Chaitanya's, amongst Lord Chaitanya's associates, who were they in their previous form or other form as associates of Krishna. Later, when Kavi Karnapur or Puridas was a little older, just like Mahaprabhu had done with his dog, chant Krishna, he said, bring Puri here. So he came in front of him and he said, chant Krishna's name. And the boy remained silent. Mahaprabhu looked around and looked at the boy and chant Krishna's name. Silent. He tried many times and he kept remaining silent. And Mahaprabhu then said, I don't understand. I've appeared in this world to induce everyone, wild animals in the forest and dogs and the lowest of mankind, they all chant, but this boy doesn't chant Krishna's name. Why is that? And Srup Damodar, his assistant, said, I think the reason is because he's heard the name Krishna from you. He understands he's been initiated in the chanting of Krishna's name, and since he's heard Krishna's name from you, he's chanting constantly within his mind, but he won't chant aloud. That's the son of Shivananda Sen. And one who becomes like we read in the Bhagavatam, as the qualification of Maharaj Yudhisthira being very dear to the Lord, and of course also Arjuna, the dearmost friend of Krishna, Abhimanyu being the qualified son of Arjuna, and the father of Maharaj Parikshit, that qualification by the astrological calculation was understood to be the same. It's not guaranteed if the father is good, the son will be good. Or if the father is bad, the son will be bad. But, so the jata karma was being performed, and the next verse in the Bhagavatam is exactly that. Maharaj Yudhisthira said, very nice, you're saying some nice things about my grandson, but here's what I really want to know. O great souls, will this boy become as saintly a king, as pious in his very name, and as famous and glorified in all his achievements as others who appeared in his great royal family? Will he actually bear the qualification necessary to be the ruler? Because, back to the Bhagavatam, Prabhupada is saying that a Mahabhagavata need not be a sannyasi or a renunciate. The Mahabhagavata may be the king. And when you have a Mahabhagavata for a king, then you have good government. And Prabhupada would say, let them elect, let them, if they like democracy, let them have democracy, but let them elect a Mahabhagavata king, president or prime minister. But where is that Mahabhagavata candidate to elect? You won't have without proper qualification, without proper training. And the means of making that training take place, it's being described right within the Bhagavatam itself. Where are the qualified priests to perform the sangskaras? Where's the message of pure devotional service being taught from childhood, as was Maharaj Parikshit, or any great king? It's not by accident or by popular vote, but it's by qualification. If the means of selection is this means or that means, let the person who's selected be qualified. And without the leader being qualified, how can the citizens be expected to be qualified? And when the leader is qualified, automatically, because they're shreshtha, they're the best, and people will follow, then by following the qualified person, people become qualified. It's in one sense, it seems circular. So how do you get out of that circle? How do you establish quality when there isn't quality? That's the challenge of this age of Kali. That's the question that the sages were asking Maharaj Parikshit. Excuse me, sages were asking Sutta Goswami. In this age of Kali, everything is bad. Manda sumanda matayo. What's to be done? What's that means to bring quality in this bad age? And that means is the hearing of the glories of the Personality of Godhead as they're described in Srimad Bhagavatam and the chanting of the holy names of the Lord. Hare Krishna. So we got a little Sri Mayapur together with Srimad Bhagavatam. Any questions? Yes.
At the beginning, you said that when the Lord kills the demons and protects his demons,
yeah,
in his Vishnu form.
Yeah.
But when Krishna appears, he kills Sakasura, Abhasura.
Yeah.
I don't.
So that's within the person, within Krishna. He is Swayam Bhagavan Krishna. All of the forms of the Lord are within him. So Vishnu is within him. And the Vishnu feature, the Vishnu aspect of Krishna is what's killing demons. That's what it means. Just like another example of that is Krishna instructing Arjuna. So, Swayam Bhagavan Krishna in Goloka Vrindavan isn't instructing in Arjuna or removing illusion from a bewildered soul. He is simply engaged in transcendental pastimes, enjoying with his devotees. So, that feature, here's how it's described in Chaitanya Charitamrita. The Madan Mohan deity is the presiding deity of Sambandha Gyan. You're familiar with that, yes? Okay, so that feature of the Supreme Lord who establishes the proper understanding of the relationship of all things with Krishna is that feature who is speaking. So Krishna is everything. All the forms of the Lord, that feature of Krishna is being manifested this way and the other feature in that way. But they're all aspects of Krishna. Someone else? Yes?
Maharaj, you were speaking of how the Mahabharata devotees don't see dualities. in my stage of Krishna consciousness, I see dualities. And depending on, you know, how secure I'm feeling in my relationship with my teachers, it's easier or also easy to see it's the mood of service. Would you kindly elaborate on what it takes to transcend the stage of just being caught up in dualities?
Nishtha, as opposed to anishtata. Nishtha means steady faith, and anishtata is unsteady or unsteady bhakti. But that steadiness is, and unsteadiness is measured by faith. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that the beginning is preliminary faith, adau shraddha. The final stage is prema bhakti. And everything in between, the beginning stage up to the final stage, there's terminology, but it's all just descriptions of stages of faith. Faith and faith and faith and faith and faith and faith in the penultimate stage of faith. Unflinching faith. So, faith is not just a belief. Faith is that it's a Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gives the definition of faith is the confidence that by achieving one thing, all other things are accomplished, all other desirable things are accomplished. So it's a deep conviction, and it's expressed in the form of action. Like this, the faith of Shivananda Sen in Lord Nityananda. Whatever Lord Nityananda does, it's perfect. Even if it looks not far from perfect, it looks like horrible. Mm-hmm. It's perfect. That's faith. And because of that faith, then nothing can deter him. Worldly duality doesn't move him. And seeing that unflinching faith, that's what Lord Nityananda wanted to do. He just wanted to exhibit to the world that quality of Shivananda Sen. He's not just good at making material arrangements. He's on the topmost platform. Let me demonstrate. Ah, the sons of Shivananda Sen, I curse them to die. Not moved. Not moved. Kicked. Not moved. Seeing mercy. That's the eligibility. And so how can one come to that stage of unflinching faith? It's cultivation on the path of pure devotional service. One has to, without envy, accept the conclusion, and then gradually be elevated by the process of bhakti itself to that conclusion by the mercy of the Lord. It's a gradual evolving. So one of the things that we need for that is patience and perseverance. When I was small, my father planted a fruit tree in the backyard. And we all, you know, each summer we go look at the tree and wonder, when's it going to bear peaches? You know, it takes time. Be patient. Keep watering the thing. And in time, it'll bear, little peaches will come out of the peach tree. If the seed is right, then it will bear good fruit. And Kelly?
We understand that Pariksit Maharaj was a pure devotee from birth, and you said that was one of the reasons why Lord Vishnu protected him. I was wondering if we had any history on how he was a pure devotee.
I mean, who he was before he was Maharaj Pariksit?
Yeah, I assume he's a pure devotee due to more than just the samskaras or the stellar arrangements that were there.
Yeah. Who he was before he was Maharaj Pariksit, I've not heard any description.
Because like Narada Muni, we get some history how he
became. Yeah, how he became Narada, but I don't know that history. I've not heard that history spoken anywhere. We can assume something, but yes?
Well, Maharaj, you were describing the Pravritti and the Nivritti mind, and it just seems the Pravritti mind cannot work, you know, in this age, because like you described, fruits of piety plus an impure heart leads to pride. Because we practically see people who are, you know, who are on the Pravritti Marg, and it just increases the attachment rather than
yes.
spiritual.
But there's not even qualified priests to properly perform that. That's one of the thematic repetitions in Prabhupada's writings. I remember Prithu Shava probably remembers this some years ago in Chicago in one of the suburban temples. They were advertising they were going to have an Ashwamedha Yajna. Remember that? It was I don't know whatever happened to it, but it was, they wanted people to, you know, contribute gobs and gobs and gobs of gold because they wanted to have an Ashwamedha Yajna. Well, Prabhupada would say it requires such an enormous amount of wealth, such an enormous amount of ghee, and qualified priests. They don't have any of the three things. So where's the qualification to do it? What to speak of, even if they had the gold and the ghee and the grain and the priests. What's going to be the result of it? Some piety without purity, and they'll just become, you know, goo goo gaga over the fruits of that piety. They become overwhelmed by it. It's Kali Yuga. Not the means for this age. Okay. Hare Krishna.